Hello. How is everybody this week? We all good? Cool? How you doing, Mike? You all right?
I'm doing really good.
Good. Okay, so we're back again, listeners, with a whole new episode this week on a whole new subject. And we have notes.
Hooray! Yay, I have notes. Yay! Oh, dear, what a debacle that was.
I listened back. I don't think it was as bad as we thought it was, but it just felt really bad because neither of us knew what we were doing at any given time.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. My sister thinks she's going to be famous.
She is already, Mike. The internet has gone mad for Millie.
Yeah, that's it. Well, she doesn't quite understand that anyone really could go on the internet, and she seems to think because she's on the internet now, that means she's going to be famous.
Well, you never know. You
never know.
Justin Bieber. We just need Usher to be listening to this podcast. That Millie, she's got some sound opinions. Let's get her on Film 2012.
Oh, dear.
But, a little bit before we get in proper to this, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not talking to you, Mike. I'm talking to you, okay? You as in the people listening to this, because we know you're out there. We can see you. We know you're listening.
You're all right?
There's about 100 of you now, which we're really proud of. There's about 100 people who are consistently following us and downloading our podcast. So, first of all, thank you. Really means a lot to us. There's just two chaps that are doing this for our own entertainment. Thanks for listening.
Cheers.
But you're not pulling your weight, guys. Yeah. We've got a Facebook page. We've got an email address. Use them. Come on, get in touch. And I tell you what, as a little incentive, I will give away my copy of Fantastic Mr. Fox, right? I will give that free, gratis, okay, to the first person that sends this show an email address, an email. You don't even have to answer a question or anything. Just get in contact. You have to live in the UK, though, because I'm not posting out all over. I'm not made of money, right? You can have my copy of Fantastic Mr. Fox, all right? Just email us in. The podcast address is backtothesourcepodcast@gmail.com. So get in touch. Come on.
And if this don't work, I'll have to find something to give them next week.
Yeah. And it will just keep rolling over until we have to give away a car at the end of it.
Take my wife.
Please, take her. Right, so this week we are doing Kick-Ass.
Kick-Ass, yeah.
Based on a comic book written by Mark Miller, I want to say. Is that correct? Yeah, Mark Miller. And the film directed by Matthew Vaughn, written by Jane Goldman. So it's got a really good pedigree to it. So very brief rundown of the plot. It is yet another take on the superhero genre. Dave Wazowski?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Something like that.
Something like that.
I am more prepared than last week. but Dave wants to be a superhero, loves his comics, and decides that he's going to do it himself with varying results of success. But we'll get into that. First problem I've got, Mike, I don't know what to call this film.
What do you mean?
Well, because you're not going to struggle as much with this as I am, are you?
No. Say it's Kick-Ass.
Yeah, because Mike's Cornish, it's very natural for him to say ass. I want to say arse, kick arse, but we'll see. We'll see how I go with that. I'll probably flip between the two. So, Mike, when did you see this film or read this comic? What's your history?
I saw the film first, funnily enough. My brother got it and we watched it and I thought it was really cool. And then realised it was based on a comic book. So I got the comic book and I really enjoyed the comic book.
Okay.
Even so much, I've just currently bought the second volume of Kick-Ass.
Yep.
So I'm doing it now. I don't know what to say. Ass or arse?
You stick with ass, you'll be fine.
I'll stick with ass, yeah.
I think my story for this film was probably through you, because I'm pretty sure you put me onto the film. You told me I should watch it.
Yeah.
And I did. And then you lent me the comic book, which I then read.
Yeah.
Just a little bit about how it came to be made. Mark Miller, the writer, and I didn't realise this until I was doing the research, but he's a very successful comic writer in his own right, isn't he?
Yeah, he's done a load of stuff with Marvel.
He wrote Civil War. I had no idea about that.
Brilliant. I love that.
Very successful writer, Scottish chap. He had the idea for Kick-Ass. Mm. And here we go, a little link. He rang Jonathan Ross and said, who should I take this to? Jonathan Ross then rang Matthew Vaughan and said, look, my friend's got an idea for a comic book. Should he speak to you or speak to Marvel?
Mm.
He spoke to Matthew Vaughan. So then something we're finding again and again with this, it was already in production pretty much as it was being published, wasn't it?
This is the weird thing. It's a very complicated, isn't it? Because it's being written at the same time as this. So as I sat down to watch and read and look up about all this, I thought, oh no, what if this isn't the source material? What if the comic book isn't the source? It was a bit of a dilemma, and I came to the assumption that because he came up with the idea first, the comic book is the source material. I'm going to go with that. Yeah,
no, I'll agree with that, because, I mean, yeah, because it's not like a novel. The comic book's periodical, so because it takes so long for these comic books to play out their arc, it hadn't, that arc that you see in the film hadn't even finished in the comic book world.
No.
By the time the film had been wrapped.
Yeah, precisely, yeah. I think they got up to, by the time they finished the script, I think they'd only got up to the sixth issue or seventh, coming into the seventh issue of the comic book.
And how many issues are there in total?
Eight. I think it was the end of the sixth one that they got to.
Yeah.
And so they had the last two comics, so coming to the end of the story, weren't even written by the time the script had been finished. So that's a weird one. And you can really tell when you watch the film as well.
Do you think? Because my memories of the book are quite vague, so you're going to be a good little person to draw on. It's lucky I did this for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
But you're right. I think you can legitimately call the Mark Miller's comic book a source, because it's not as if he didn't know where the story was going either. He had this arc in mind, surely, and then... I suppose.
Yeah.
But then he does state in the special features that the film and the book sort of fed off each other as well.
Each other, both.
So, as I said, my experience of coming to this is all through you. You told me to watch the film and then I read the comic book. I really enjoyed the film as well. I thought, you know, it is a new way of looking at that superhero thing.
Yeah.
And it does it in a very different way to others, sort of say like Watchmen. Because it's sort of doing a similar thing. It's taking it and it's putting it in the real world. But whereas Alan Moore put his characters' mental states in the real world, but he left them in a fantasy land. You know, Kick-Ass is very much planted in reality, I think.
I would say more so the comic book than the film.
Really?
Yeah. When I first saw the film, I thought it was brilliant. I was like, wow, this is amazing. Read the comic book then afterwards, sometime afterwards, I think, and then watched the film again. And watching the film again, I went, oh, this isn't, this is not as realistic as the comic book is.
Okay.
I felt. And it's simply, I think it's simply because of the ending.
Right.
Because, like I said previously, that the last two issues weren't out when they finished the script. I think that's why it. So at the end, it follows a similar path, and it's the one thing that gets on my nerves is the jetpack.
You know what? I couldn't really remember, but the comic book, as I said. But as you were speaking there, I thought it's going to be the jetpack because it does. It feels out of place. It really does.
It does, doesn't it? It just comes out of nowhere because I'm thinking a jetpack is. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure no one has made a jetpack that works successfully.
Well, this is the thing that you can argue, because you can go on like Firebox and sites like that and you can buy a jetpack there for like £200,000 or whatever. But, you know, whether it's actually going to fly is another matter. So you can argue that it's a reality, but it even if it is, it feels like it's drawn from that world, you know?
Yeah. But that's what jarred with me was the jetpack, and then it's taken the reality out of it.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, the climax of the film really is Kick-Ass, the superhero, main superhero. He's flying through New York, isn't he, holding Hit Girl, who is another superhero that he encounters. And that ending is that doesn't feel very grounded. I'll give you that. That feels very sort of fantasy-esque.
Yeah,
but there's other characters that surround Kick-Ass. So you've got essentially this guy's got no superpowers. He's just a comic book geek off the street. Decides to have a go at it. Gets the shit beaten out of him on his first attempt, which actually leads to him having a sort of ability, which his nerves get shot to pieces, so he can't. He has a very high pain threshold, correct?
Yeah, and he's got metal plates all over his body. So.
That's it. So he's like as close to Wolverine as you can probably get in real life.
Which says in the film, I think. Yeah. Wow, I look like Wolverine. Yeah.
And then as he's attempting to be this superhero, he gets success and like he gets on the news and his MySpace page goes to the roof. And then he encounters two other superheroes being Big Daddy and Hit Girl, who are sort of much more clandestine and much more in line with a Punisher style superhero. They're sort of, you know, wiping out scum and actually killing people and getting away with it.
Yeah.
And then their two worlds sort of collide, and then they get into a big fight with a drug dealer gang lord. Would you say that's what?
Yeah,
he does?
Yeah, gang lord, drug dealer. Yeah, yeah.
But I think in the film, the relationship between, because Big Daddy and Hit Girl are father and daughter, and the girl is what, 10, 12?
I think she's supposed to be 10, yeah.
10, and her father's sort of rearing her as a vigilante and training her up to be, you know, super skilled at weapons and stuff like that. And in the film, that was a real controversial point because you have a 10-year-old girl killing people and swearing. And
I think the controversy came from one word. One particular word.
Do you want to say it?
Well, yeah, she says cunt at one point. Yeah. That's it. It's explicit now, isn't it? We're not going to ever do one that's not explicit. No, she says cunt at one point, and that's what most of the trouble came from. And I read a quote from her because everyone was going on about this, and she said, I wouldn't use that language at home. I'm doing this. I don't even say the name of the film at home. I call it The Film or Kick Butt.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, I mean, it's. I think it's silly when you think about the violence in it. That's what I would thought you would be more, people would pick on more, but no, it seemed to be that one word.
But yeah, she is running around slaughtering grown men, with knives, and it's a very brave thing to do, to put that on film. But it is as graphic as that in the books, isn't it? Really,
I would say, the violence I would say would be even more graphic in the book, because I did hear them say that they had to tone down the violence for the film.
Yeah.
Which rightfully so, I suppose.
Because you can do a lot more on the page, can't you, than you put on a screen.
That's it, but in the comic book you see people's heads being cleaven in half and legs and arms being cut off and all sorts of things.
You know what, I do remember this actually, because do you remember when you lent me this book? This was, I was in my last year of uni and I was like working in a call centre. Sorry, everybody. to make ends meet, and they used to let you read at the table, and I was reading Kick-Ass at the table, and I remember getting to certain points and just sort of having to prop the book up a little bit so no one saw what I was reading.
I think I read it on the tube, so I had to hold it very close to my face.
Yeah,
no one could see what I was looking
at. It's one of those books, isn't it? You want people to see the cover and know that you're reading it, but not what it contains.
Yeah. It's always the way. I'd sit next to an old deer who'd tut the whole way if I had it.
But do you think, because I can't really remember the comic book very well, but do you think the way they toned that down in the film, do you think they still did it justice, or would you have preferred them to be even braver with it?
No, because I can be realistic and understand that you've got to tone it down a bit, because your rating, your certificate is going to go up.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get as many people coming to see it. But I think they do a good job of keeping a lot of violence in there. There's a guy, which is not in the comic book, guy in the microwave.
Oh God. Yeah. That's very gory.
Yeah. They've got the guy in the car crusher.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, Hit Girl does cut someone's leg off at one point.
Yeah, she does. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's keep enough of it in to make it gory enough, but I suppose it's one of those things. If you've got it all the way through the film, lots of it, you just don't stop taking notice of it after a while, don't you?
Yeah, you get desensitized. I know that's like an awful word to bandy around, but it's true. You know?
Yeah, it doesn't have the same impact then, does it? If you've got that odd bit that's really like, oh, what was that? Then it makes more of an impact, I think. So I think they did a good job with that.
I think it was handled well, because I think if they, you know, the film's very gory, you can't get away from that, but I think if they'd gone even gorier and they'd had sort of tried to be truer to the comic books version of that, I think it would have felt more like a slasher horror film, you know, which is not something I would have wanted to watch, to be honest.
No.
It's different. In a comic book, you can accept that, but in a film, it will take it to different places, you know, and it would have put it alongside Saw. Like, it would have put it alongside Saw and things like that, you know, which is not a genre of film that I think does anybody any good.
I agree.
But we've reached this point, so I think it is time to... I've got a special guest this week, Mike.
Have you?
Yeah, I'm just going to bring him on now. Come on. This is my high horse, Mike.
Oh, he's beautiful. So tall.
Marvellous coat, isn't it? This film is a British film.
Mm.
British film.
Yes.
And more than that, it's a British independent film.
Yeah.
Because no one would touch this.
No
studio. It was shopped around Hollywood. Nobody wanted to make it. Lots of people expressed interest. I'm saying this like I was there. This is all on the behind-the-scenes commentary. Lots of studios expressed interest, but they didn't want to do it the way it was written. They didn't want to have Hit Girl that young. They didn't want to have her doing those sorts of things. And Matthew Vaughan, the director, and Jane Goldman, the writer, Jonathan Ross's wife, I don't know why that's important, but she is, they wouldn't budge on it because they felt like if they made Hit Girl older, it would have sexualized her, which, again, it becomes a different sort of film. And if
they wanted her to be the love interest at one point, didn't they?
They wanted little strands like this, or they wanted to tone down the violence, which then, again, it's not Kick-Ass, is it? You can't call a film Kick-Ass and not have a certain level of violence, you know?
Yeah.
So they refused to budge, and the studios refused to give them money, so they just made it themselves. It's quite difficult to find out where the money actually came from. If you bear in mind, at this point, Matthew Vaughan and Jane Goldman had already made Stardust, like huge, huge film. They're a really good partnership, those two.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, Jonathan Ross is involved, and another couple of big names were there. And there are some big names listed on those credits as executive producers. I think Brad Pitt is as well, actually.
Is he? I didn't notice that.
Yeah, no, he is. He's listed as an executive producer. So I think it was just a case of these people pooling their money together to get this film made.
Yeah.
And then, of course, once they did it, everybody wanted to distribute it because it's, you know, it's a film a lot of people wanted to watch.
Yeah.
So there we go. It's the little man taking on Hollywood and winning.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Because it's a British film.
Hmm.
Trying to be an American film.
Yeah, and doing it really well.
He said that at one point. And you wouldn't know from watching it. And it's only because when I first saw it, I noticed a couple of actors in there who had been in, I don't know, some BBC drama or something. And I thought, I know they're British. Why have they been hired?
There's a lot of British talent. Mark Strong, who plays the main villain, British. You've got lots of people in his gang are British as well. Dustin Diamond, I want to say. No, that's Screech. do you remember The Games Master?
Yes.
Dominic Diamond used to host Games Master? Yeah. He's in it. He's the guy that gets killed in the Crusher.
Yeah.
But also, Kick-Ass, the main character, is a British guy.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't know that until I bought the Blu-ray.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was
and he auditioned for it in America.
Yeah. But again, the production cast had said, oh, we don't want a British guy for this. Took them ages and ages. So they finally sent this kid in and just said, do an American accent.
The way to do it.
But there we go. I'll send out my high horse now.
Bye.
Go downstairs, get some hay or something. I'll be down in a bit.
Beautiful mane.
Look at that tail. Hey, see her go, but I love to watch her leave. Anyway, that's enough of me. So there we go. But yeah, to get away from the film side of things and more to what we're meant to be talking about, I'm aware of a few big things that are different in the versions of this. The one, I would say, you might disagree, but I would say the biggest change and the change that feels most like a Hollywood adaptation change is the relationship between Big Daddy and Hit Girl. Agree or disagree?
Yes, yes. Which I don't like.
Let's just quickly recap this, more for my sake than anyone else's. But in the film, as I said, Big Daddy's raising Hit Girl as an assassin and a vigilante. Mm-hmm. And he keeps her very cut off the world. She doesn't go to school. She's homeschooled. And then he tells her the story of how things happened in the form of a comic book. And basically, yeah. Big Daddy was a high-ranking police officer and refused to be bought off by the crime lord that is the main villain in the film. So then this crime lord sets Big Daddy up, sends him to prison while his wife is pregnant with Hit Girl. And the strain of that pushes the wife to suicide and Hit Girl is left to be raised by Big Daddy's best friend. Right, now that's the story in the book, in the film. How does that differ in the comic book?
That's the story she knows.
Mm-hmm.
It ends up not being the truth.
Okay.
So it comes out, it's like, this is my origin story. I was a cop who wouldn't be paid off, and the mob killed my wife. And it goes to this until they get captured near the end. Mm. And it comes out that he wasn't a cop at all. He was an accountant.
And
he just got bored with the life. It's pretty much the same as Kick-Ass. He thought there's more than this. He's just an accountant. He's a nobody. He's nothing special. He's just an accountant. He's carrying around this big silver suitcase.
Mm-hmm.
Which no one can get into. And that's how he's been funding getting all the guns and equipment and stuff. And you find out what's in the case is all the original back issues of comic books. So like Spider-Man number one. Or Amazing Fantasy, sorry. All that sort of thing. And that's how he's been selling them on eBay to pay for all this. Now, I think I kind of understand why they changed it for the film.
Okay.
I can get that works better as a narrative in a film, but I think it's so depressing in the book to find out that he's just an accountant that just thought there was more to it than this.
Yeah.
And it makes him so like pathetic as well, which I thought is a real shame to take out the film. You kind of understand where he's coming from because of the. He seems more of a nut job, I think, in the film. Like,
yeah, he definitely seems unhinged. Definitely,
yeah,
But I think that is probably. I think there's a lot of things that contribute that, and I think that's one of them that they do just leave his backstory as that, and the other one is the way Nicolas Cage plays him. It suits the way he's written in the film because Nicolas Cage has decided to do this Adam West voice every time he's dressed up as Big Daddy, which is the first scene I thought, oh, I'm going to hate this, but it does grow on me. It did grow on me. You know?
You see, it went the other way for me.
Oh,
it was
really?
Like, I thought, oh, that's genius. Brilliant. That's wonderful. And then it got further on and I was like, oh, please stop it. This is getting on my nerves now. Is not funny anymore. Come on. Because I think that in the film there's one bit where he's on fire and he's still doing
he's
screaming. And I'm like, it took something away. It took it away from me.
I can see your point with that. It does sort of, it takes the edge off a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
To do something that caricature-ish with it.
Yeah.
Invented a word.
It's a good word.
But like I can see, I mean, because I'm guessing, like you said at the beginning of the podcast, like by the time that they were writing the script for this, the last issues of the comic hadn't been released yet, and the ending of the film, it doesn't feel like you could have put that kind of revelation into the film. It wouldn't have sat well,
I don't think so, and I understand why they did it, but I thought it was a shame because I was just thinking about watching it again. It's like you've got him doing something quite funny with the Adam West voice, and then to find that out at the end, and I could just imagine it being so like heartbreaking that he's told his girl this story and he wants to protect her and he thinks he's doing right and he's nobody. He's not this cop or anything.
No.
I miss it a little bit. Yeah.
He is just the same as Kick-Ass, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Where does it come in the book? Does it come before or after he dies?
Just before he dies. Just he reveals he all dies. This. He gets shot in the head.
Oof.
With a really graphic, horrible picture. That's it always gets me, this horrible picture with his eyes popping out of his head and the bullet coming out of the front of his skull and all the blood and everything and teeth flying out of his mouth as well. It's just, oh.
I'm glad they didn't do it like that in the film.
Yeah.
But I think, you know what, there might be space for that revelation, but I don't think it would be in the first film. Because they are making a sequel as well. And I think that it's not beyond the realms of possibility that that revelation might creep into the sequel. Because in the structure of a film, you know, you've really got those three parts to play with. And in that third act, it should all be wrapping up, you know. And that kind of revelation, if that's going to come, it belongs more in the later half of the second act or somewhere like that, you know.
Mm.
So there's a possibility, I think, that they could jack that into the sequel and still have that emotional heartbreak that you're looking for.
Well, I've just finished reading the second one.
Okay.
And, I don't think it would have a place. I don't want to say too much about the second one.
Okay.
Because I'll say this, it's a lot darker than the first one.
Really?
Very much darker.
Okay.
Quite unnerving in some bits, actually.
Really? That's the really first interesting.
One, yeah, the first one is quite jokey and things, and there's still some of that in there, but it takes a much darker turn.
I mean, because you, how would you classify the film? If you had to give it a genre, what would you say? I mean, it's going to be a compound genre, isn't it? It's not just one thing, but what would you say?
I would say like a action comedy.
Yeah.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah, that's how I would say. A comedy.
Yeah.
It's a black comedy, you know.
Yeah.
It's not like Pineapple Express or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's dark, but it's definitely a comedy. So it's interesting. Yeah. Do you think the second film, does the second graphic novel play as funny as the first graphic novel?
Like near the beginning it does. And then I would say about... After the third book, so you'd say, what's that, the first act? The end of the first act, then it's pretty dark all the way to the end.
That's very interesting. I'm really interested to see how they handle that.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting. And reading the second one, it does concern me a little bit about the casting they did in the first one, in the film.
Oh, I think I know what your problem is going to be.
Well, go on, guess.
Red Mist?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So just to explain, Red Mist is another supervillain that pops up.
He's a superhero.
Superhero, that's right. But he's actually a supervillain, hired by the big evil guy to sort of
trap. It's his son. It's the mob boss's son.
Yeah.
And his plan, because he's a comic book geek as well, he knows how to... relate to
entrap him, but no, in the film that character is very comedic. I can't remember the name of the actor, but it's McLovin, isn't it? Super bad.
McLovin.
So he's very broad strokes, very sort of, he's comic relief. He's C-3PO, you know. So that's interesting. So he's going to go in a different direction in the second one then.
I really can't see him doing what he does in the comic book. I can't see him doing the same stuff. To certain points I can, but it's going to be difficult. It's going to be difficult.
I haven't read the second book, but what I will say, Mike, is Neville Longbottom.
All right. What about him?
Well, I mean, if you think, there's about 10 years between these films, but if you think of Neville Longbottom I'm talking about the films here, Philosopher's Stone, and then you think about Neville Longbottom in what was the last one? Half-Blood Prince.
Deathly Hallows, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Deathly Hallows, that's it. God. Deathly yeah. Hallows, yeah.
There was two of them. How did you forget that?
Yeah, you think about that. It's possible. It is possible. Maybe this guy has that within him as an actor and he just hasn't had a chance to show it yet.
I think, actually, now you say it, he would have been a good... I think he would have been a good Red Mist, actually.
What, the guy that played?
I think he would be a good Red Mist.
So you want to recast now? You want to go back and recast?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that guy really showed, didn't he? We're going completely off topic here, but that guy really showed that he could do the full range, you know, from comic relief to sexy hero calling through tunnels and like, oh, I'm going to avenge the death of Harry Potter. Look at that. We've done a spoiler for a film we're not even reviewing. So just to sort of track back to the first film, Red Mist, as I said, very broad in the film. How is he handled in the book?
He's very similar, but he's more...
different.
He's supposed to, he's supposed to be more cool. He's I think they focus too much on the geek aspect of it.
Right.
I think a problem they've got in this film is they're thinking of one type of geek. Type of your stereotypical geek.
Hmm.
Whereas in the comic book, he's more like, he's more emo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's more of an arse. And there's, it's interesting because in the film, he feels when Kick-Ass gets taken away, they take him away. He's like, oh, Kick-Ass, I didn't mean for this to happen. I didn't mean for this to happen. In the comic book, he relishes the fact that he gets to torture Kick-Ass.
Right, okay.
And he really is, he's a bad guy by the end.
Mm.
He just seems a bit, he's more arrogant and he's definitely more of a son of a bitch.
Okay. That's interesting because you don't get that sense from him at all in the film, do you? You get more of a sense that he's just misled and he's done the wrong thing. It does feel like he regrets it, but then at the end you have a big fight between him and Kick-Ass. But then again, the very last shot of the first film sort of hints towards where the second film might go with him, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And now I know what the second film should have in it. I'm not sure.
I'm a little worried.
Yeah.
Okay, so we touched on it then, but let's talk about casting. So how well do you think the film does in casting the characters from the comic book?
The girl who plays Hit Girl, do you know her name?
Chloe Moretz.
She's brilliant. I think she's brilliant. She's a very good actress.
Very, very talented.
Yeah. At such a young age. Yeah, I think she does it brilliantly.
Yeah.
Let me think. Who else do I like?
Just a note on her. It was so strange listening to her talk about the character because she's so professional. She sounds so professional. She knows what she's talking about, you know? Mm. We went to drama school and there were people there that weren't as clued in as her, you know, by a long mile.
Yeah. She's very mature, isn't she?
Well, yeah. Which I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing, but for the film, it was very cool, you know?
Yeah. I kind of like Nicolas Cage.
I have a real soft spot for Nick Cage.
Yeah, I think that's what saves him, is that most people have a soft spot for him, because I think anyone else doing what he's doing there would have gone, what?
Yeah.
Do you know, they wouldn't have accepted it at all.
He's the right choice, though, isn't he? Because he's got that edge to him where you know he can do really good stuff and act well. But he's also got that Nick Cage edge where he's going to go and do stupid films and, you know.
Yeah.
And also, he's a huge comic book fan, so he's right for it in this respect as well.
Yeah, hasn't he got a Ghost Rider tattoo?
He has, huge, silly Ghost Rider tattoo.
Oh, dear.
I could maybe excuse that if you had it done at 17, but Nick, come on.
While we're on Big Daddy, it's a funny thing because I do like him in the film, but I do prefer a lot of him in the comic book because in the comic book he's so much more mysterious and you don't quite know what's going on with him. And I don't know. I suppose it worked. His costume in the film, which is obviously a big Batman riff-off.
I was gonna mention that. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, it works with the. It does work with the voice, because then you see that he's a bit of a geek himself as well.
Mm.
Yeah, but I'm not sure. I think I do prefer the comic book. It's just like a scarf with the eyes cut out across the face. And I know that they didn't like it for the film because they said it looks like a serial killer.
Sort of see their point, but Big Daddy in the film looks. You could take Big Daddy out of Kick-Ass and you could put him in Watchmen and he wouldn't look out of place.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He looks like a film superhero. Whereas in the books, in the comic book, he looks much more like a vigilante, as you say.
Mm. Yeah. So who do you like in the casting? Who do you think?
I really like the main character, Kick-Ass. Yeah. I think he's a really good choice, that guy.
Yeah.
I do like Nicolas Cage. I can agree with you on that one. I think he's very, very good. And also Chloe Moretz. I've got to say as well, Mark Strong. Very good villain. Very good villain.
Yeah.
And you could see as well that he took it really, really seriously, I think. In the special feature, you can see he really trained hard and things like that.
I thought it was good.
There are a couple of things that maybe weren't right and didn't perhaps sit with the style of the comic book a lot, but like the two best friends, Kick-Ass's two best friends.
Yeah.
They were a little, in the film, I think they're really good, but they don't really sit with the idea of the book being sort of harder. Do you know what I mean? They're very much comic relief, those two.
Yeah. Which they're not so much in the, I think they're more well-rounded in the comic book. They're more like the group of friends that you'd have who are taking the piss out of each other all the time. And
yeah, which you get, you know.
And there's the bickering over comic books, you know, what's the best comic book and or story arc in a comic book and things like that, which it feels more real. Because I think Mark Miller is a big comic book fan. I read somewhere that this whole comic book was very
autobiographical.
Thank you. Did you see this on the special features? He was saying about how when he was 15, him and his friend wanted to go around a small village he lived in Scotland, dressed up like superhero, patrolling. And that's where the idea for the batons for Kick-Ass.
Okay.
Because they decided that they would have an iron bar each. And that's what they would use.
How heroic, yeah. I can understand that. And that's something I really like about this film. Because I've thought that. Have you ever wanted to become like a masked vigilante?
I can't say I have.
Okay.
I've often thought, and I'll pose this question to you, that if you were given superpowers, what would you do with them? Would they be used for good or would they be used for evil?
It depends what ones I've got. Can I have anything I want?
Well, no, it has to be an accident. You accidentally get these powers.
Well, like I accidentally become chemically bonded to iPhone or something like that. And I become Google.
Google man.
It depends what I get, man. Because, like, if I get flight, I'm using that to go to work. And, you know, I'll make some money off it. Because you can't really fight. If you've just got flight, that's the one I want. That's the one I would have, please. If someone's going to send these in to us, I'll have flight. Thank you very much. Okay. But I can't really fight crime with just flight. So I'd probably just use it to get rich.
Okay.
How about you?
I think I'd probably use it to get rich. Yeah. But a part of me is like, I had this idea.
Here we go.
When I thought about this, it was like, I've been given superpowers. I don't know what to do with them. Who am I going to go and consult about this? I would go and see Stan Lee and ask what he thinks.
I can see the logic, But
I would go to him and go, look, you've imagined this for a long time. Now it's real. Think what you would actually do. Come on, please help me here. Because you've got to see that I could make quite a bit of money off
the
this.
The thing is,
when I was writing The Hulk,
I saw a fly crawling up the wall. Yeah, no, that's probably a good way to go. But then Stan Lee, you know, he's not particularly kind to his characters, is he?
No.
Especially in their first little outing. He'll always, you know, be a little bit harsh to them. Look at Spider-Man. He had a really rough ride.
Yeah, poor Spider-Man. Yeah, I'm not going to go and see Stan Lee, the bastard.
Go and see Bob Kane. Oh, no, you've got time travel. But what superpower would you pick if you could have one?
I've always been drawn to Spider-Man.
Want to be able to, like, climb walls? And
I really want to climb walls, yeah.
Mm, and have that, like, gymnastic ability.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That's pretty good, man.
Yeah.
Do you remember the one you came up in conversation between the two of us when we were not quite in our right state of mind?
Probably not then, no.
I thought you came up with a brilliant one, because you'll probably figure out, listeners, this is not the first time we've had this conversation. I've been pretty consistent with flight. Mike tends to change his mind every now and again. We were talking about becoming superheroes. This is genius, man, and no one's thought of this either. Maybe we shouldn't say, maybe we should copyright it. It's copyrighted. Mike was going to have the power to make people feel guilty.
Yes.
And be called the conscience. So instead of, like, busting into a bank being wrong and beating them all up, he'd just walk in and go, what are you doing, lads? What would your mum say?
Just a deep sigh. That's all you need. They'd be like, oh, no, what am I doing? Oh.
Your catchphrase would be, I'm not angry. I'm disappointed.
Yeah, that would be perfect. No, I want that. Yeah, I do want that. Yeah.
Then we'll team up and I can fly you places. And that's how we'll work.
Fly me to the bank, Tom.
The flying bear and the conscience.
We'd be a sight.
Wouldn't we, Jess?
Yeah.
Because I tend to think, as flying, it would be the same as walking. I'd still have to, like, hitch my trousers up occasionally and miss steps. So it'd be like this odd flight path through London. Like.
Oh.
But to bring it back to vigilantes, I think there's no reason why the world can't have a Batman or someone like that. And I think it would be a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying I would ever do it, because I'm in no shape for that. But I mean, I've been in situations before where something's happened to me and I've just thought, Christ, I'd just love it if there was someone in the shadows now who could sort this out for me.
Yeah.
Teach people a lesson and give, you know, people a reason to be nice to each other. And in a way, Mike, that superhero's Jesus.
The first hero.
But again, there's a reason why I really enjoyed Kick-Ass, because I could really identify with that. And especially being a teenager as well, that's when you really want to make your mark on the world. You know, you really want to be known for something good. And when you're like 16, 17, I think most people think, you know, one day there's going to be statues of me and I'm going to be, like, you know, heralded. And it's a very, you can identify with that very easy, wanting to do something good.
Which is a point I wanted to get to, is that in the film I feel they copped out a little bit with Kick-Ass.
Oh, okay.
In the comic book, excuse me. In the book there's the line at the beginning, everyone wants to be Paris Hilton but no one wants to be Spider-Man.
Such a good line. Yeah.
It's a brilliant line, isn't it? Yeah. And the whole way through the book you get that feeling that he wants to do good, he wants to help, he wants to be a superhero. And then there's one bit in the film which I think it kind of ruins it kind of takes away from his character, is when in the film the Big Daddy burns down the lumber place, which is where Red Mist trying to take him, and he thinks his dad and things are in there. Red Mist's dad's in there, and there's a similar thing that happens in the comic book where he's driving along with Red Mist and there's a house on fire, an apartment block, sorry, on fire. And the interesting thing is, all the lines are the same, but they gave them to opposite characters.
Wow, that's really interesting.
So in the comic book, you've got Kick-Ass saying, oh, we've got to get in there, and Red Mist going, I don't know. You know, I don't want to go in. Why don't we wait for the fire brigade or what have you?
Yeah.
And then it's vice versa in the film. And I just thought that's just taken away because Kick-Ass is supposed to be this superhero, and he's not worried about himself. He wants to help people.
Mm.
It's just suddenly he's taken it away from him. And I don't feel he's that heroic. He doesn't come across that heroic in the film.
No, he doesn't. You're definitely right about that.
Sorry.
No, I think it's stupid. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. It's coming from a heroic place. And I think that you're right about that. Because in the film, it's sort of... What does he actually do? Like, before he meets Big Daddy and Hit Girl, he breaks up a fight. And that's what gets him famous. Then he just seems to answer questions on his MySpace page.
Yeah.
The next thing he does is for that girl.
Yeah.
And he's doing that to get laid.
Yeah. And even then he seems a bit, you know, not into it. Where in the comic book,
yeah.
I feel he's a bit more like he's going in there and he's like, I'm going to prove a point. And he does get a few shots in and stuff in the book. You know, so you can see that he's like a little Jack Russell. He wants to get there, but he's not big enough or strong enough. Do you know?
Yeah.
And in the film, it kind of, he tasers him and then gets knocked down. It just doesn't seem as, he hasn't got that little drive.
No, you know? He gives up far too quickly in the film.
Yeah,
doesn't he?
Yeah.
It does feel like he's just doing it for the girl. And then once he's got her, it's,
yeah.
Sort of falls by the wayside a little bit.
Yeah. And I suppose I can understand it a little bit for the film because then he does, at the end of the film, come up in that jetpack and is all heroic.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you've got that build-up. But, I felt a little disappointed that he wasn't as heroic. That's all.
No,
yeah.
I can definitely see your point there. So, book or film, Mike, which one's better?
I'm going to go with the book.
Yeah?
I'm going to go with the book, yeah.
Reasons?
I think I said it at the beginning, it's a lot more based in reality.
Hmm.
So like I said, that jetpack thing really annoyed me. no, there was another thing as well, actually, the whole relationship with the girl,
yeah.
Where he pretends to be gay and everything, and then it works out fine for him.
Yeah.
It's a bit... I hate to say it, it's a bit Hollywood, isn't it? That she's going to go, yay, that's okay for pretending to be gay. You've seen me naked, that's fine.
So it's not like that in the comic then? That's not...
No, no. She hates him and gets some bloke to beat him up. So, it's, you know.
Yeah.
My opinion, I prefer the book. I think that's... not to say that the film's bad at all, because it's... very good adaptation,
but
I feel.
You prefer the take that the book gives it on it.
Yeah. And I think it's only because the end wasn't finished. They hadn't finished the book when this had been written. I think that's a detriment to it, I think.
Yeah.
I
think what might have hindered it ever so slightly, and it's quite an odd thing to say, is Mark Miller's opinion on the adaptation as well. Because he had a very interesting relationship with it. Like, he said that the way he was looking at it was he really took inspiration from Raymond Chandler, who wrote all the Sam Spade detective novels that then got turned into films with Humphrey Bogart. Mm. And to varying degrees of success. And an interviewer once said to him, do you not get annoyed that some of your work has been sort of, you know, ruined or changed by these films? And he just said, look, the books are still on my shelf.
No one's
changed a word of those. And Mark Miller felt the same way about the film. So he kind of seemed like he had the attitude of just like, we'll do what you want, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas if he'd argued a little bit more for the reasons why he'd done it like that in the comic book, maybe the film would have been slightly different.
Yeah, possibly. Mm. Yeah. And I think I'm a little bit spoiled because I've read that second one.
Okay,
I think I'm a little bit spoiled there. I can see what's coming, and there's things that happens in this film, which is going to affect the next story.
So there's even more. There's even more coming.
Then. Right. Well, let me put one thing. The jetpack. I just hate to keep coming back. Jetpack. But at the end, he goes across with the miniguns, doesn't he?
Yes.
Kills all those people. Comic book, he hasn't killed a single person.
Okay.
And that's an important part of the next part, the next one.
I see. So
that he is a hero, and heroes do not go out. He's a traditional hero, and traditional heroes do not go out and kill people. They apprehend them or subdue them.
So then already the second film is going to be vastly different from the second book then?
Yeah, because he has killed. He's killed,
three many, people. Many, yeah. Many men.
Many, many men, yeah.
Big guns.
Yeah.
Cool. I would say, like, listening to you talk about this, that I think the general impression I'm getting is that comic book, the graphic novel, is about someone trying to be a comic book superhero, whereas Kick-Ass the film is much more about someone trying to be a superhero from a film. Do you think that makes a little bit of sense?
Do you know what? That makes a lot of sense, actually. I've not thought of it that way, and I can accept it a bit better now you said that. That's a good point. That's a really good point.
Mm.
I can accept the film a little bit better now, thinking of it that way.
You'll be able to sleep easy tonight.
I'll be able to sleep easy tonight, yeah.
Which kind of makes sense, because, you know, they say in the behind-the-scenes stuff, a film's a very different animal. And
yeah.
You've got to be more compact with your storytelling, you know, to get it all in there. So you have to, you end up sacrificing little bits of background and things like that in order to do that.
Yeah.
But I really like both, and I would actually be hard, even though it's been a while since I read the comic book, I remember really enjoying it. And I would actually be hard pushed to say I prefer one or the other, because I think they're different animals, you know?
Yeah. But I'm edging towards the comic book. I'm not afraid to pick one out.
I mean, really, I should pick one. It's the whole point of this fucking podcast. I'm just sitting on the fence here.
You got a fence and a high horse, Tom. Yeah. Come on. Get off one of them.
Oh, I should really have done this indoors. cool. I've finished my notes. How about you?
Got
anything else on there?
My notes. All done.
Awesome. Any other business we need to attend to?
There is. I feel a bit guilty, Tom.
Oh, no.
I feel a bit guilty because last time, we gave a shout out to someone who had left a comment for us.
Vague Lil,
yeah. And there was another comment on there, which was posted before Vague Lil.
You're right.
Didn't mention him. So I'd just like to say to Jimmy D, 83, big thanks. Big thanks.
Thank you, Jimmy. Yeah, no, Mike's very right. That was really out of order of us. You were the first one to post. And I think, actually, he posted on one of the very first days that we were live on iTunes. So
yeah,
thank you, Jimmy D83. Thank you. And Jimmy D83, this copy of Fantastic Mr. Fox could be yours. That could be in your hands in a fortnight's time. Well, about 3 weeks' time. Remember, that's still running, guys. You don't have to answer a question. You don't have to draw a picture. You can draw a picture if you want. Just email in and I will send you a book. I will send you a book that you would have to pay money for in shops. And all you've got to do is send a fucking email.
Oh, is that the best way to go about it?
Yeah, I'm gonna take a stern hand with them, Mike. They're gonna run all over us if we don't start this now, you know, because we will be monetizing this at some point. We're not gonna do that. We don't think we're Ricky Gervais.
We're gonna have to get sponsors at one point to make this.
Who are we gonna get to sponsor us?
I don't know. Who can we get to sponsor?
Jimmy D83.
Once we send him the book.
Yeah. I'll send him a book and he'll be like, lads, you know what? I actually own a company and I need someone to advertise to specifically 100 people.
Yeah.
That'll be us.
We're going to have to think up some sponsors and possibly just kind of name drop.
Ah, Coke, I reckon. They'll go for this. I drink a lot of it.
Yeah.
Well, I think that went better than last week.
Much better. Mm. Yeah.
Even without the addition of an actual child.
An actual child. I wouldn't let an actual child watch this.
No. You know what? We should really wrap this up. I'm just going to say this. Like, I wanted to start this podcast with Hit Girl's Line. Because, you know, last week I did Hello, My Darlings. I wanted to just start it going, hello, cunts. But I didn't have the balls.
Oh, Tom.
Never mind. Ever. So we will be back with you in a fortnight.
In a fortnight, yep.
Do you remember what we're doing next week? Next time?
Is it Misery?
It's Misery, yeah. Hey, we didn't say who we were doing this one's for. This was one for the geeks, really, wasn't it?
Kick-ass. One for the geeks.
So next week we're doing one for the
scared people.
Like sad middle-aged women. One for the sad middle-aged women next week. Oh, we're so going to get more listeners. Okay. Well, I've thoroughly enjoyed myself yet again. Mike, how about you?
As always, Tom, as always.
Near the day, that's all that matters. But thanks for listening, guys. Really thank you. Appreciate your continued support and interest in who we are.
Yeah.
Thank you. See you in a fortnight. Bye.
Bye.
Well, after all my ranting and raving about getting in touch, I actually forgot to give out the email address. So if you want my copy of Fantastic Mr. Fox, just give us an email, anything will do, to backtothesourcepodcast@gmail.com. Thanks, guys. Bye.